Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. I'm glad you're with us today. You know, we've done this show for quite a while now. We've had a chance to talk to a lot of folks, and even today, one of our guests has been on with me before, so we're going to have a good time kind of rehashing some things that have come up. Want to remind you that one of the goals of Central Coast Voices, and the key goal, is really to share with you credible, valid information and insights about things going on in our community and diverse members of the community. We want to address how today's choices in both our community and the nation affect tomorrow's community and how we look at long-term ramifications of changes and in some cases look at long-term ramifications of lack of changes in our society. As you've heard me say before, but I'll say again, Central Coast Voices is a project of Action for Healthy Communities, which is a committee of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. And we put out a report every 3 years called Vital Signs, Understanding San Luis Obispo County. You can see that whole report and acquire an entire copy of that report at actionslo.org. That's actionslo.org. It's available as both pieces and an entire report, and it'll give you a great cross-section of what's going on in the community. We're going to give you an interesting cross-section today of what some of the things that have been going on in the community. As we look at technology and look at things that have happened over the last 20 years, 20 years doesn't seem very long to me anymore, and that's probably a bad sign about my age. But 20 years ago, a bunch of tech people got together and put together an organization called SoftTech. It's an organization, not a company. It's actually an association of technology and software companies, individual engineers, and today I'm joined by a number of two of the founding members who've actually disavowed that they were founding members, and that'll be part of the discussion when we get into it, of SoftTech, and that association and how it's basically looked at and worked with tech businesses. These are their words, not mine, okay? Tech businesses, geeks, makers, and entrepreneurs. I would not necessarily insert the word geek in a conversation, but it seems like people who are geeks or consider themselves geeks are willing to insert it in the conversation. So we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. My guests today are Josh Erdman. Anyway, he's a senior consultant with Techtegrity, and he's SoftTech's current president. Jeff Buckingham, who is the president of Norcast Communications. He's a serial entrepreneur, which is probably a discussion we'll have to have as to what serial entrepreneur means, because both he and Henry Hernandez, my third guest, list themselves as serial entrepreneurs. Jeff is currently the secretary of SoftTech. And he's also listed as one of the founders who disavows that he's a founder, so we'll talk about that concept. Henry Hernandez, who's a technology consultant and engineer, another serial entrepreneur, and one of the founding members of SoftTech. So probably before we get into why some of you are founding members and some of you are non-founding members, who wants to jump in and explain the brief elevator speech, because we'll get into the non-elevator speech a little later on, of what SoftTech is?
I'd be happy to.
Josh, the current president. So you get the role gets dropped on you. Go ahead.
Everyone's pointing at me for those that can't see. So SoftTech, we're a nonprofit organization. So we are ran by volunteers. So our board, everyone has a day job. And with the funds given to us by our sponsors, we are able to put on a lot of large events and do some sponsorship of local high schools and their robotics programs. And we promote a lot of technology events that are popular and inspiring for the geek and also for those that are technology curious. We have a monthly tech brew, and out there we've had people show off 3D printers, lasers. A local sponsor here that's a very popular national company is iFixit, and they've even done a teardown, taking apart iPads, for example.
Yeah, by the way, I want to be on the record that the president of SoftTech, used the word geek, so I did not insert it in the conversation without it being thrown at us in some of our notes beforehand. But let me remind you, this is a program for public radio, and this is a community radio station, as you probably know, KCBX. And this is a program we'd like you to participate in if you'd like to. You can participate in SoftTech, but I mean as far as the program today, and you can give us a call at 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. And be part of this discussion. That may be a question, an observation, your own experiences working in the tech industry. We want to probably talk about this as in a fashion that really focuses on what's of interest to you. So if you'd like to call in and help us look at what the focus is and what we want to, where we want to go with this program, please just give us a call, 781-3875. Okay. Jeff, I'm going to jump on you because I guess for full disclosure, I think I've known you for 30 plus years.
Yes.
Anyway,
how
long ago did you get married?
Well, I got married 25 years ago.
Okay, then I've known you for 30 years. Yeah, I knew you about 5 years before you got married. You're one of the first people I ever dealt with and talked to in a tech company, and that was a communications tech company.
Sure.
Which has been in a number of different incarnations. But in your experience, 25 or 30 years ago, what was the tech industry and what was technology company? What were technology companies doing on the Central Coast? And I guess where were we?
Well, and I think it's good to set the stage. And I think, in my view, what really set the stage was the dawn of the internet. And picture those times. It's hard to imagine now when most people had no idea what an email was or how to send it. Nobody had seen a browser. So, you know, the way that all got started in San Luis Obispo is Henry and my good friend King Lee and I were down in Los Angeles and we were visiting a company called I'm trying to remember the name now. You might remember.
Jump in, Henry.
That where I saw my first. It was one of the ones that King was CEO of, I think, for a while. Quarterdeck. And they had licensed the Mosaic browser and were trying to compete with Netscape to be kind of the browser on the internet. And so I saw the Mosaic browser with Quarterdeck's additions to it running on a T1 circuit that runs at about 1.5 megs, you know, way slower than the average connection today. And I saw my first graphical experience in the internet. And King and I were flying back, you know, to San Luis that night. And at the time, you know, we had a company called Call America. We were providing telephone service in the area. And I said to King, somebody's got to get this internet out to the business community here. Who can do that? And kind of started to sink in as we were flying back from Los Angeles that we were probably the ones who kind of needed to do that.
And you couldn't pass it to somebody else, huh?
So we literally went over to Cal Poly and kind of knocked on the door and said, hey, do you guys have that internet thing? And shouldn't we figure out how to get that out to the community? And they said, yeah, you know, you're right. So we would have these meetings. You know, and I still work with Joanne Mercier in my office over at Norcast now, but Joanne would go over there and Steve McCartney and I, we would sit there with the folks at Cal Poly. It was a guy named Art Glosher and James Feld, who's still over there. And we were trying to figure out, how do we do this? So that was nobody knew anything. We're all so excited about the possibilities of the internet, but one of the things we realized is we had to find a way to evangelize all of this. And that led to many things. And I think it was in that environment that SoftTech kind of came forward, where, you know, Greg Biggers and his partner came up with this idea. And at the time at Call America, we embraced being involved with that.
If we back up a little bit, in relation to that particular great enlightenment that you had.
Right.
Did that pre or post date people like Phil Wagner starting things like SlowNet?
Well,
SlowNet had been around before that, right?
No, actually not.
Henry's saying yes and Jeff's saying no.
I'm nodding to your question.
Yeah. Okay. SlowNet came along. The first thing that I recall got together, we got together with Cal Poly. We initially set up a bank of modems And Cal Poly provided a server, and we built this dial-up internet service at Cal Poly. After a little time, it became clear that that really wasn't going to work very well on a university campus, and so we ended up moving it to Call America's office. Once we got it moved to Call America's office, you know, we had this service where people could dial up and get on the internet and send emails and browse. You know, there were different, other than the browsers today, there was the text interface, remember, called Gopher? Yeah. So you could go through like a menu because the bandwidth was so limited. So in that environment, we had to figure out ways to help people learn how to use all of this. Okay. And as we were figuring it out ourselves.
Okay, what year was this?
And that was, I'm bad at the what year is questions, but it was the early 90s.
Okay. And 1942.
Yeah. Okay. You may know, Henry, what year exactly it was. And so then we got together with Phil Wagner, and he said, hey, we want to get SlowNet started. And we started collaborating with them and saying, you know, yes, let's figure out a way to do this. And I remember people saying, are you crazy? You've got a business running with an internet service provider, and you want to enable a free or low-cost competitor to come in. Doesn't that defy all logic? And the old logic it did, but the logic of the internet age, it really did not defy. And we were able to kind of recognize that. Maybe 10 seconds ahead of the rest of the people around us. And so we enabled SlowNet, which generally dealt more with individuals, and it was envisioned to maybe be free, but it couldn't really be free, so it was a small charge, less than what we were charging.
It was like $3 a month.
Or something like that. And the interesting part is KCBX.net here at the radio station is the evolution of...
For full disclosure, I still have an account. I have a kcbx.net account, which is my main email account. And I actually discovered, because occasionally people who are harvesting emails and such, I'll look at stuff and say, gee, where did this person find my email address? Right. And I'll notice that it still went to my email address at slownet.org. I mean, slownet.org. And it would still work. It still does work.
Yeah.
So KCBX has kept that going. Right. But
that's the geek factor.
Okay. That it still works. They haven't lost my address yet, even though I've tried to get more invisible than I am.
And I think what Henry's referring to is that is, in your case, you were kind of geeking on that detail.
Yeah, that's probably about, unfortunately, that's about as geeky as I get, though, because most of the rest of it goes over my head.
So you're here at the table, Fred.
let me remind folks again that we're talking about SoftTech, which is an association of a geek association, and we'll define it a little better than that. And you're welcome to participate in this discussion at 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. So this is – would we call this a trade association? I mean, what do you define SoftTech? I mean, it's not the AMA for medical – for geeky people, okay? It's not the Chamber of Commerce. One of the things that I noticed in the notes in the profile that you sent me about SoftTech was that you encourage – that it doesn't cost anything to belong. And that you don't have to be a techie or a tech person or in a tech industry to be a member.
That's correct.
But so why would I want to consider even being a member of such an organization if I wasn't already a geek, even though Henry has basically said, based on the geek factor, that I'm a geek too. So thanks, Henry. Okay. Josh, jump into that.
Come for the robots, stay for the tech brews. We have a lot of fun at SoftTech, and we fill a vacuum. When you look at the typical tech company that's here, iFixit, they have employees here, but the majority of their customers are throughout the nation. Same thing goes for some of the other large tech companies like MindBody Online and also Rosetta. They build large websites outside of San Luis Obispo County. So the chambers aren't organizations that help them with their commerce. How else do they reach out and get involved with the community with people that they interface with and employ frequently? So that's where SoftTech comes in. We put on these events where their employees would frequent and enjoy. We are that watering hole where employers, when they want to reach out, find new employees, or contribute back to the people that are very similar to who their employees network with, they support SoftTech.
Yeah, Josh, you've been on the program before. We talked about robotics and school robotics programs when you were here a few months ago. And I went to a program that you folks put on at the Elks Lodge for high school. Basically, it was a demonstration of high school and junior high school robotics programs. So there's a lot of neat stuff like that you do. I want to talk about maybe an interesting side to this from my perspective as a non-geek person, even though Henry's now accused me of being one. The county of San Luis Obispo and the Central Coast generally has not been a conducive environment for manufacturing. It's too hard to get commodities in and out of a reasonably rural area that you don't find major manufacturing of components going on based upon the relaxed environment and the lack of major freight conduits, if you will, in and out of the area, with the exception of the wine industry and agriculture, which is a different issue. But for some reason, technology, especially when we're dealing with technology that doesn't require the movement of apparatus, seems to thrive here. Why is MindBody here? Why is iFixit here when you would think you would find companies like that in Silicon Valley?
I think you saying the geographical word Silicon Valley is it's not the location that creates intelligence or great ideas. And it's the people. And when you have – some people have great ideas, but they don't want to live in a metropolis. Well,
yeah.
What better place than on the Central Coast where you are midpoint between the two locations, where hopefully you can create a gravity of not only a great work environment, a great place to live, but also a great community of people and bring them down from Silicon Valley and up from L.A.
Yeah.
What do you say about that, Henry?
Yeah, you said – something along the lines, why don't you find these types of companies up in the Silicon Valley? And you do. I mean, these are not unique companies. What's unique about them is that they're here. And the reason this type of company is here is exactly because of the problems that you mentioned, the difficulties with transportation. Developing software requires, a building?
Yeah. You know? Zero transportation.
Yeah, this is, people are looking for a place to lead their lives, great place here in the Central Coast. And we have sharp minds, and sharp minds will develop industries. And so, the software industry was a natural for here. And I think earlier you asked about technology sector. The technology sector is not strictly technology companies. There are an awful lot of supporting industries that are required. Right off the bat, you need a place to run your business, real estate. You support services, accounting, law.
Telecommunications providers.
resource services. And
IT companies.
And so as to the question, why would I want to be interested in SoftTech, a tech organization, if I'm not a tech company? It's because it's a lot more than just a tech company that builds a tech sector.
Okay. Right. We do have a call. Let me get to our okay.
Beautiful.
Okay. Eileen, you're there.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. My name is Eileen Barber, and I used to work at Call America
Hi,
under
Eileen.
Natalie Diggins.
Okay.
And also under Jeff Buckingham, and I just happened to be listening and hearing you talk about years that were very nostalgic for me, and I was going to mention that I got hired about 94, and the internet services providing started around, I think, at least a year before that.
Right,
so
that sounds about right.
The timeline.
Okay.
And it was just a really enjoyable and informative experience for me working at Call America and with Jeff Buckingham, I have to say.
Yeah. Are you still in that? Are you still in an industry related to technology, or?
Yeah, I'm a freelance graphic and web designer, so I do mostly web design now. Having that experience with the Internet Services Department was influential. Registering domain names and just being in touch with all those companies that were there from the very beginning. I remember Henry Hernandez's name, and a lot of those people that are still working with Jeff were there. No, and Ryan Woolley, I remember him.
Ryan Woolley was our engineer, young engineer, who we found at the Rotary Job Fair at the high school. And the first year I went and met him, he was so young, I couldn't even consider hiring him. Then I went back the next year. He was still there, still knew way more than I knew about telecommunications and the internet as a teenager. So his mom would drive him over to Call America after school, and he would work for a while. And he was involved in helping us set up the first internet service provider and support a lot of customers. Many people remember Ryan very fondly.
Yeah. Okay. Eileen, thanks for the call.
Yes, thank you. Bye, Jeff.
Bye, Eileen.
Okay. A lot of the tech companies that we deal with, that I deal with and see as a non-techie, in spite of the fact that that Henry is now sort of anointed me as an official geek because of my comments and history with SlowNet. But a lot of the companies, I've got to kind of scratch my head. And one of the ones, and Josh, you brought it up, is iFixit is an interesting head scratcher for me. Because 90%, if I go to their website, and I have, 90% of what they offer on their website is free for the taking. Yes. They will, if I need to figure out how to take apart my Asus T100 because there's a battery problem, I can get a schematic that they did because somebody at that company actually likes to tear things apart before they ever get public. But that brings up an interesting question for me, and maybe it's just a ridiculous question when we get the answer, I don't know, is how do some companies like that generate revenue? Because let's be realistic, no one's in this. There may be nonprofit organizations, but you still have to generate some revenue or you can't continue doing what you're doing.
Well, specifically for iFixit, in their quest to help people repair their own equipment, a lot of new technology and other sales opportunities have grown out of that. iFixit, they have this amazing platform that shows you how to fix something. And
it's not just technical things.
Yes.
It's designed as a wiki. And for those who aren't familiar with that, it's user driven. So anybody can go to iFixit and put in processes that demonstrate how to fix anything. Your radiator on your old Ford, your washing machine. It doesn't have to be an electronic thing for iFixit. Their goal is to make everything in the world repairable.
So just because when you go to their website looking for something to repair, they have an offering of having used, or if they can source it, new pre-tested equipment, replacement equipment for what you're trying to fix. A lot of times this would be an iPhone screen, for example,
right.
Or the screen to your Surface or a touchpad. Right. And they also have fixits on the Xbox 360. That was a popular game platform that would fail frequently. From their intellectual property that they've developed, that website, it's called Dozuki. That's what they built. Now they're selling that to large industries who use that internally on how to fix a lot of their equipment, whether that's production lines,
right.
Or and things that are proprietary that they want to keep secret, but have that same ability to empower their employees to update the procedures.
Yeah, so they sell software and parts and tools. So, but as part of that, this is what's so fun about iFixit and a lot of companies in the tech sector, they spend a lot of time evangelizing the right to repair issue, and like Slow Chamber of Commerce has voted to endorse right to repair. Many organizations throughout, the country, throughout the world have endorsed that. The Farm Bureau endorsed right to repair for agriculture equipment, and iFixit's been working on that as well. So it's so often a lot of the work that is seen isn't necessarily where the revenue flows from, but we're sure glad they're here.
Yeah, because I guess it. Well, here's an example of a Central Coast company, not a San Luis company, but a Santa Barbara company, Citrix, which I have a product called Go to My PC that I use.
Sure.
I pay a whopping $10 a month for the ability to use that on three different computer platforms. So I guess an observation is, and that is a very large company that is doing very well from what I can understand. I did some backstory research on them before we went on the air today. But they've got to sell a $10 product to a heck of a lot of people to make it work. The difference may be, though, that they don't have to physically deliver any hardware or equipment to me, or even an owner's manual to use the product.
Sure.
So maybe economy of scale for those companies works both ways.
And I bet Henry would probably have some good input on Citrix as what they do as a company and how they're structured and where their revenue comes from. And
well, I was just going to add that your instance, the product you use is the personal product. You know, they definitely are an enterprise company delivering enterprise tools, which are significantly more expensive. Mm-hmm. That's definitely part of their revenue model.
Yeah. There's been some amazing developments in that. Your desire to connect to your computer, that's existed for years. In high school, people were using Laplink, and that was either to transfer files between computers before networks existed, then it evolved to dial-up. Right. But the responsibility of the person at the time was they were responsible for creating their own connectivity. They had to get their own modem on their computer, get that working, get that on a phone line, and then call it from their office. So they were, in many ways, their own ISP. Now, when you look at how software has matured, how compression and the ability to have reliable communications between computers has improved, and now where the infrastructure just works. Once when you buy your internet, every computer comes with network capabilities. You plug it in. It's all given for you. Now they're able to create this amazing platform with a beautiful interface.
Yeah, I guess none of us have bought a standalone. Well, you may have standalone modems for some purposes, but I don't think does anybody have a standalone modem anymore?
Well, and most computers don't even have modems anymore. You know, but the Citrix. You know what Citrix? I remember using Citrix pretty soon after the dawn of the internet, and it was all about essentially what we refer to now as terminal services using. Having a main computer in your office, and your employees were able to connect over a low bandwidth connection, and all that really transported between the computer at the distant site and the main hub was just the screenshots coming back and forth. And so I remember running Citrix. Steve McCartney set it up at Call America, and I was running it on a dual B-channel ISDN to my house in Shell Beach, and
Can you translate that into English, please?
Yeah, okay. And I will. Okay. But essentially, it was about 112K connection that was essentially an ISDN is Integrated Services Digital Network. It's something that never really evolved too far in the United States, was big in Europe, but we used to use it in the early days of the internet before DSL, to provide an always-on internet connection at somebody's home or business. And if it was, we would run T1 circuits where we could, and those were $600 a month, but we could run these ISDN connections and leave them connected all the time, and we could get 112 to maybe a little bit more connectivity. But I ran Citrix. Not only could you run Windows-based computers off Citrix, I had a Macintosh, and the way I integrated that into our Call America network was I had a Macintosh SE30, which is the small little box computer, the Macintosh. I ran the Citrix client software, and I was able to access our main computer or server at Call America and do a lot of my work at home when most people couldn't do that. And so Citrix has been around for a long time, and really hot product, and with the expansion of bandwidth that's available to people now, Citrix is still, I believe, a pretty big player. They expanded into the GoToMyPC, which I thought, did they acquire that, Henry?
I think so.
Yeah, but they're a core product. They've been doing their thing for a long time and really are a big player.
I guess there are two key products I know are like GoToMeeting, and GoToMyPC.
Sure.
And there's
It's their enterprise product. Enterprise product that you can use Citrix if you had 1,000 people working all over the world, and you had one main computer in a data center someplace like Digital West,
yeah.
you could connect all of those people through Citrix.
Okay. Well, that brings me to an area I guess I hadn't thought we were going in, but we've talked about a little bit the concept of how you effectively have a, for lack of a better way of putting it, a multinational corporation in your back pocket in San Luis Obispo County. I mean, we, for those of us who drive through the Edna Valley, we see, right. Rosetta,
sure.
and Mindbody, large facilities. But I think of people like Josh and Henry,
right.
that can do an awful lot of tech services work by remote control. The flip side of something like GoToMyPC or GoToMeeting is, I guess, if I had a computer problem I was trying to solve and I called Josh or Henry up, they could basically come in and I don't want to make this sound like a negative. They could capture my computer screen and work remotely from pretty much anywhere. Is that something that kind of ability is something that's bred the success of small startup companies in the computer industry in San Luis County?
Wow.
Jump in, Henry.
Well, remote management. Okay. Josh, I'll let you talk about that. But connectivity. With the internet, people being able to connect from anywhere, it does provide the ability to work with remote teams. As a matter of fact, this morning I was on a conference call, a work session, where we had parties here on the East Coast in the Boston area and a small team down in India where we were doing a project review. And, we're all just talking, sharing screens. It's as if we were in the same room. So the increased bandwidth and the tools that are available to us allow individuals, companies to work, remotely. Not everybody has to be under the same building to get work done. Is that where you were going?
Well, and I'd like to jump in here because I think we're talking around what I believe is probably the biggest issue in the room, and it really doesn't have anything to do with technology, and it's quality of life. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of volunteer work with the chamber, and one of the things that came out of the chamber years ago and has gone through the process is the economic vision document. And part of what that was about was getting everybody – was kind of getting everyone together from different parts of the community, looking and seeing what is it about this place that – we love and what makes it work. And the short answer is it's a lot of it is about quality of life. And that's why I believe that's why you see Rosetta here. I know that's why I'm here.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wanted to be a dairy farmer and came to Cal Poly and was going to go back to New England. Why didn't I go? Mm-hmm. Because I didn't want to, because I love it here. And so I got into telecommunications and technology only because I wanted to stay here for the quality of life. And so,
For the record, you do raise cows too.
That is true. I do. I do. I like cows. I always like cows, I love working with cattle. I love working with technology and customers and everything else. But the reason that I'm here is quality of life. And I think that's a huge part of the underlying success of the Central Coast. That's why I think a lot of people are here from the tech side. And I think what's cool about tech as opposed to maybe manufacturing is tech can be here. Some other things just logistically cannot be here. But that is a choice we can make with many industries, either tech industries or industries empowered by technology, which gives them the ability to be here or anywhere,
So to make a Caterpillar tractor at a manufacturing plant in Edna Valley or Goleta is pretty difficult because you have to have a way to competitively move it in and out of the area along with the parts.
And you got to have it approved by local government.
Okay. But most of what you're talking about, you can be an international commodity in this area in technology without without ever getting off of your farm, I guess, for lack of a better. I mean, you could sit with a, in Jeff's mm-hmm. case, you could sit with a computer overlooking your ranch or whatever you call it, a ranch or a farm.
Sure, right? We call it a ranch.
Okay. Doing an awful lot of work, and you may have clients who would not realize you're actually, you know, watching the cattle graze while it's going on, which is a pleasure we have here sometimes.
Right. Me or anyone else,
yeah.
You know, these days.
Yeah. Let me remind folks, we're talking to three of the people involved in SoftTech, which is an association of technology and software people, mostly, I guess, engineers and technologists in to call it just the computer field would be ridiculous. Jeff's already made it clear that it's telecommunications and a number of other things. And you're welcome to be a part of this discussion. This is Public Radio KCBX, and you're part of our community. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875, and you're welcome to be part of the discussion. If you have some questions that are with regard to areas of this we have not broached yet, please call in and just prod us to move a little bit to the left or right of where we've been with this, because we would like to make sure that everybody's interest in this get shared. Josh, you invited me, and I came to a robotics program that, by the way, just for the record and full disclosure, it was a robotics program dealing with high school and middle school robotics people. And I ran into Jeff there because he was passing out cookies.
Yes.
Okay. You didn't have enough cookies, Jeff, but you were passing out cookies anyway. What are those kind of projects, and what does SoftTech see as their real focus mission with younger people?
Well, first of all, everyone, especially almost all SoftTech members, love to see robots. So a chance to get all that together, that's selfishly for me very fun.
Do you have a Transformers collection?
What's that?
You have a Transformers collection at home?
Not yet, no. Okay. I've had to get rid of mine.
Okay.
And in addition to seeing all those robots, we can benefit the community and the education. And when it started several years ago, SoftTech was sponsoring, I want to say it was Atascadero's high school.
Sure.
Now we're sponsoring 10. Almost every high school has a robotics program. High schools that don't are the ones that they're the ones that are standing out and are the sore thumb, instead of it being the other way around, where you're the only high school with a robotics program trying to justify this educational expense. So we've been very much helping high schools be a trendsetter. And now there's robotics programs in elementary schools, and they were there well. So a lot of parents come to the robotics expo to learn from the other elementary schools, to get what's called the first Lego League or Vex IQ, the elementary school robotics leagues going.
And now, you know, SoftTech has actually taken a position that we are actively advocating for robotics to be included in school curriculum as a sport.
Yeah, that was a big factor at the program that you put on the LSLOG that came up as a topic. Let's go to the phones here. John, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead, Don. What's your question or your concern?
Hi. Since we're in such a rural area, I would think bandwidth is a key to any business surviving and doing well. And if you're not in town and you're kind of out where I live in a rural area, and I know Henry in a rural area. And when you need to communicate via internet, is there anything out there on the horizon that's going to improve our connection speeds for companies and individuals?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And John, roughly where are you in a rural area?
I live in Corbett Canyon.
Okay. Yeah, there's actually quite a few options. In rural areas, what's really happening now is a lot of different – there's a number of wireless providers. And I think it's important to distinguish terrestrial wireless, kind of like a Wi-Fi on steroids, from satellite. Satellite's typically a service of last resort. Yep. Great to have if you have nothing else, but generally a choice you would make after – a terrestrial-based wireless. And there are quite a few companies that serve that area, and they're all a little bit different depending on where you're actually located, because if you're behind a hill or a tree or something, right, your neighbor might get service and you might not. But I live in a rural area, and for a long time, T1 circuits were the only way to get to rural. We can get T1 circuits to just about anywhere that can get a phone. But these days, they're not as fast, or they're the same speed they always were, but they're not as efficient as they used to be. So like at home, I have a T1, but I also have a wireless provider that to add to that. And so I would say that would be your best bet in a rural area.
Okay. Is T1 still as – I mean, what does it cost to run a T1 line?
Well, T1s generally are available for somewhere in the $200 a month range, and you can get for that about – runs about 1.3 megs up and down. So you can do things. You can stream a couple of Netflix standard resolution videos on a T1 because I've done it. You can do some business activities and things like that. But if, like, for instance, at our home, if I'm working, I can work pretty comfortably on the T1 by myself. But then if my wife sits down to the computer and my kids sit down and start doing a bunch of streaming, that's where things really get bogged down. So some of the wireless providers can bring in substantially more bandwidth.
Okay. That I would have to, John, let me jump in here in the middle. I would have to say that's probably pretty expensive for the average user. I mean, it's I can.
Oh, yeah. That's why
I can get a DSL for about $30 or $40 a month. I can get reasonably high speed cable for about $40 to $60.
And I think that's a really good observation, Fred. The T1 is more for if you're a business person who wants to operate on a ranch and you need it to work and you need it to be reliable and you're willing to spend the money, that's a way to do it. But I agree, for the average residents, that is not a good solution, and that's where the terrestrial wireless comes in.
Yeah, so I think, John, you probably run into the problem where you would love to be able to have DSL as an option or fiber, but it's not, at least not in Corbett Canyon.
Right.
So the options are those, you know, those wireless providers, and you have to deal with the hills, line of sight. And I just have to say that I've seen that, and I live with that same problem. And I've seen that little by little, the service has gotten better. I mean, in order for them to expand out, it requires demand. And, you know, living off of Corbett Canyon, there's not much population, so you can't generate the demand to generate the dollars to support the services.
I have a 100 megabit connection out in Los Osos.
Oh, my God. I'm going to go
there. Yeah, so it's I mean, it's getting there.
Okay. Thanks for the call, John.
All right, thank you.
Okay, let's see. Gerald, are you there?
Yes, Gerard. Yes,
Gerard. Sorry about that. Okay,
no problem.
What are your comments?
I just wanted to give a shout out for. I used to work at Strathspaw, and we enabled the telecom industry here in town. And just a little blurb about employment and early Mosaic at UCSC.
Yeah.
Okay. Good point. Are you still in the technology field, or what are you doing?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm looking for a job, and I wanted to talk about people who were expert in the field but weren't exactly, you know, real hardcore IT people, but supportive people, business people, and how we could, some of us older guys, get back into the field.
Okay. No, absolutely. And we'd love to have you. Have you had a chance to come to any of the Soft Tech meetings or Tech Brews?
Yeah. I took my boy to the robot fair. That was great.
Yeah.
And I teach astronomy. I'd love to show him, you know, how to make telescopes or how to run a robotic telescope and all that. But we'll save that for later. Right now, I really want to focus on a few points, if I can get on.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Well, you're on the air. Yeah.
Well,
surprise.
Great. Well, hey, great show, guys. I just wanted to say I remember the first Mosaic experience in 1991 or 2 at UCSC in Santa Cruz. The astronomers had networks before the civilians, I think after the military. And it was very, very exciting to be able to communicate all over the world with other astronomy departments. I wanted to give a shout out to for Strathspaw. I worked there from 95 to last year, and we did manufacture thousands of machines for the telecom industry, you know, to help polish the wafers and the optoelectronic components. And so here in little old SLO, we were manufacturing like crazy, and it was a challenge, I have to admit. So I don't know if anybody remembers Strathspaw, but I think
course,
we had one of your Call America
Larry and Alan
for us at one. So my main question is, like, obviously I'm early retired from there, laid off a few years ago, and so are a lot of guys. And we're not, you know, we're over 50, and we're not all IT guys. We're more business professionals, but we would love to work in the industry. But it's intimidating when you go to the MindBody site or other sites. You see all these you know, PhDs in electrical engineering or software pedigree, which we don't have. How does a business professional get involved with some of the IT companies to get employment again, or even part-time employment?
Okay. Josh, the president of Softech, who's here, will jump on that. Go ahead.
Thank you.
And in being in Softech, I've also had the privilege of being on the selection committee for the Cal Poly CIE and the Hothouse. And they are doing community startups. What I've seen from that and events like Startup Weekend and Tech Pitch is a significant amount of great ideas, new youthful companies, and with the internet as an amazing tool, these companies that succeed take off. The problem is that you have a lot of young guys with a lot of passion, but they need that life experience and that discipline. Okay. So the first thing I would do is get plugged in into a networking group, biased opinion, get involved with Softech, see what's going on and find some companies that need that maturity and expertise to move forward. Maybe you're not the coder that's going to be coding there, but you're going to help with the discipline that some of these small businesses are lacking. They're developing really fast, but they're not doing the testing that they should be doing, and it's going to hurt them in the future, for example.
Yeah, you can sign up as a mentor for the Hothouse and for get involved with these
great
companies.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even know it at the time. We were driving the major manufacturers in the Silicon Valley for performance and delivery and just, you know, the whole chain of events that has to happen between supplier and manufacturer and consumer. It's exciting. It's hard to see that job description out there. You know, there isn't, you know, it's not just written for you. You have to really, it's kind of hard to get out there and really, I don't want to be shot down the second they say, well, do you know how to code? I'm hoping that works, because it would be great to stay in the area. I mean,
well, there's a lot of opportunity for you to get involved. We have some upcoming events. On the 4th is the Slow Makerspace Open House. On the 8th, we have our Tech Brew. It's the technology and wearables. And the local company, Sprightly, they're a startup here. Mm-hmm. They were at CES pitching their their product. It's a sleep product. It's an alarm that wakes up, but it watches your sleep patterns and wakes you up at the optimal time of your sleep, so you wake up sprightly.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the Women in Tech dinner panel is a huge event. We had over 80 people at the last dinner. We're expecting more than 120, and it's an amazing opportunity to see some large businesses and startups with women being involved. And if you go to one of those events, I guarantee you, you're going to find some great opportunity.
Yeah, I want to make sure we don't let Josh, who's waiting on the line, wait
too
long.
Sure, thank you, guys.
Got another call. Well, part of the opportunity that having Softech on the program today, because when Josh approached us to talk about this on the program, was really to look at this as a networking opportunity for people who don't even realize it exists. Not only networking for people who are already in the industry, but for networking for parents, networking for kids, networking for people who have businesses that are somehow tied to this and feel like the world's moving a little too fast for them. So this is probably a good place for you to do some networking. Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
Okay. All right, let's see. Josh, thanks for – you there, Josh?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thanks for waiting.
Sure. Yeah, my question is, I understand that the University of Hawaii is taking advantage that they're on a fiber optic connection with Asia, and we have landfall here with that same corridor of information right here in Los Osos, and I was wondering, why can't we take advantage of that probably a little bit more? And it was my understanding that Microsoft or Google was trying to persuade the powers to have that fiber optic cable landfall in the Bay Area. So there must be some kind of advantage to have that proximity.
Yeah, Jeff, the telecommunications guy, I'll jump in here.
Yeah,
thanks for calling.
I think the simple answer to that is that for most businesses, there are a few exceptions. The proximity to the cables is a kind of an overrated advantage. You know, and I'm not trying to throw a bucket of cold water on these ideas, but it's there for unless it's the type of business where fractions of seconds of latency make a difference, that's probably not what the issue. the big issue for most businesses is what John brought up, is that last mile connectivity to get to those backbones. Mm-hmm. And then once you access that, most businesses have the connectivity they need or can relatively easily purchase that. So it would be a very, very specialized business, like you said, maybe certain projects at Google or some of the others that would allow for that.
Wall Street.
Yeah. Josh, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah. Henry, jump on in. Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to get back to Gerard, and he's asking how do I connect. And, you know, the thing you've got to do is you've got to network. Network. Get yourself out there. It's not going to come to you. You got to go off and find it. And that was probably the initial few years of Softech. That was what we provided, the opportunity to network. We had the monthly dinner meetings, and we had the networking session before and the networking session afterwards. So the people can come connect. Hi, I'm looking for a job. Hi, I'm looking for people. Hi, I've got ideas. Not really looking for a job, but they connect. And when those connections occurred, we called them Softech moments.
Absolutely. Very special Softech.
Very special. But the intent was we needed to grow the technology sector, and the best way to do it was to get people an opportunity to get together and network. And so if you find yourself in a position of, gosh, what am I going to do next, you have to network.
Absolutely.
Take advantage of all the resources that are around here. Softech tries to provide as many as possible.
And I think it's important to remember, too, as a 50-something-year-old person, maybe I could relate a little bit to Gerard, I think there's a tendency as we get into our 50s and we're in between projects. I know when I'm in between something, I forget how much fun I've had, how good I've been at things, and I kind of discount myself a little bit. And then I get back into a new project, and it all comes very naturally, and everything flows.
You might also forget some of the resources you have available that you didn't realize you had.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, again, on piggybacking what Henry said, get out there and network and use Softech for that, because that's why we're here.
Yeah. And indeed, you can teach old dogs new tricks.
Yes.
Yeah, it's softtech.org, softec.org.
Okay. Yes. That's good. Henry, we're gonna wrap it up here a little bit, so I'll let you're the oldest guy related to Softech, not in age, but as far as who's been around involved with Softech the longest. What do you think it's really important that people remember about looking at the potential of what you can do in technology on the Central Coast?
Holy cow, that's completely independent of Softech.
Okay.
Wow, that's a toughie. I mean, it's not a toughie. I just know how to respond to that. What is the potential of technology? It's the same potential of technology no matter where you are, regardless of whether you're on the Central Coast or not. You have people that have the spirit of, I want to do something, I want to learn something, I want to put something together. More often than not, what's required for folks to succeed is the resources that will give them the support. I think at the beginning, way back yonder, you know, when I first came into the area with the company, what I found was a lot of independent, not connected, small technology companies, which really didn't create a sector. And I could see people trying to get them out of Cal Poly, twos, threes, trying to take an idea and do something with it, and they didn't know what to do, and they didn't have the mentorship behind them available to them to allow it to grow it. And this is something that we really tried to create through Softech. This is not unique to Central Coast. You'll find lots of Softechs wherever. So from a technology perspective, it provides opportunity. Sharp individuals with the proper spirit, pulling together the proper teams, technologies can grow.
Okay. Jeff, your last word here.
Well, and what I would just add on kind of looking to the future, you know, Softech, we're looking for board members for Softech. And if you're somebody with a background that could be valuable and you've got some time that you want to spend contributing to the tech community, we'd love to talk to you. And we're always looking for qualified board members. We especially love young, people to get involved. They're great energy. Yeah. And looking forward, you know, I mentioned before quality of life, the Chamber's vision document, that process is beginning again. A lot of that, what led to the opportunity for the Hothouse and that collaboration between the business community and Cal Poly came out of a Chamber trip to Boulder, where we saw what they were able to do in Boulder. Mm-hmm. And then working together, we were able to work with the community to create it here. So, you know, board members, vision for the future, there's a lot of opportunity going forward here, and we're looking to take this all to the next level with SoftTech, and we'll evolve to meet that need.
Okay. Josh, how do people get involved in SoftTech, and what do you have coming up as far as events? You might want to reiterate that.
On our website is where we post all our major events, softec.org, softtech.org. If you sign up for the newsletter, you'll get emails about some other upcoming minor events that might interest you. We are not only do we promote events that also aren't ours, like the Slow Code, a programmer's interest right. group, and a user interface interest group as well.
But we sparingly promote them. There's no spam on SoftTech's list.
That is correct.
Very strict about that.
Okay. And when it comes to upcoming events, on the 4th is the Slow Makerspace Open House. The 8th is our Tech Brew. We have that every month over at the Grill House. It's at 5 p.m. This month is going to be on technology and wearables. So those are like the Apple Watch and the Fitbits. The 24th is our second annual Women in Tech Dinner Panel. We had that last year, and from that we were able to start a Women in Tech interest group. They meet regularly once a month for a breakfast, a lunch, and then also a happy hour. If you go to our website, softtech.org, you can learn more about that one. And the biggest one this year is our 20-year celebration. On May 25th, we're going to have this very large celebration. We're very excited about it. I'm a little intimidated about being president for that. You know, how well this goes is going to be on me.
Did you miss a meeting when they had the vote? Is that what, yeah.
We're hoping former SoftTech president Natalie Diggins will be able to attend that anniversary.
Yes, please. Yeah. So we want everyone to be there, and we certainly want people to get involved and help us to make this this celebration a huge success.
Yeah, I want to add one thing that we did mention briefly, and that is if you want to become a member of SoftTech, there is not a membership dues.
That is correct.
So in other words, people who can right. become part of members of the organization
correct.
Can be members of the organization even if they are unable right. or unwilling or whatever to right. contribute any money towards the
SoftTech
organization.
SoftTech is supported by sponsors. Okay. You know, for instance, Norcast is a sponsor, and we pay some money to contribute to SoftTech and many other local companies who have interest in tech or support side of tech. Contribute that. And we're also always looking for great sponsors okay. who want to support SoftTech.
Thanks for letting us know. I want to remind you this is Central Coast Voices, and we're a production of Action for Healthy Communities, a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. As I said, as your host, I get to do this every other week, and I share the microphone with Chris Kington Barker, who will be speaking next week with Gabriella Grant, the Executive Director of the California Center of Excellence for Trauma-Informed Care. That's Excellence for Trauma-Informed Care. You'll have to listen to really understand what that's all about. And Sandra Miskovich, Director of Maternal and Child Health with the San Luis Obispo County Health Department. And they'll be discussing trauma-informed care, a treatment framework that involves understanding, recognizing, and responding to efforts of all types of trauma, and how the public and public agencies can work with trauma in the medical community. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities, as I said, in collaboration with KCBX, and we thank them for letting us be on the air here. This program is underwritten by a grant from Joan Gillard Sargent, and I want to thank my guests today, Josh, Jeff, and Henry, for a lively program talking about things that you might thought it were boring, but doggone it, technology is not boring, even if you're not in it all the time. And you can get a hold of us at voices@kcbx.org or 5-4-3-2-3-2-3. This has been Central Coast Voices. Thanks for listening.